This is the WRFI News feature. I'm Celia Clark. Since the start of the war between Israel and Hamas in October, there have been several separate rallies in Ithaca supporting Palestine or Israel. Public emotions ran high when the Tompkins County Legislature briefly considered a resolution in support of Israel and flying the Israeli flag in the legislative chamber. It was around that time that I asked three local interfaith leaders to talk about their work together and how the war is affecting it. This is part two of my interview with Mahmoud Burton, a leader in the local Muslim community, Rabbi Shifra Tobachman, the spiritual leader at Tikkun V'Or in Ithaca, and Reverend Dr. David Caden of the First Congregational Church of Ithaca. We spoke before the recent arrest of a Cornell student for allegedly making violent anti-Semitic threats online against the Jewish community on campus. Each of these leaders made it clear their opinions are their own and don't represent their entire faith communities. We pick up with Rabbi Tobachman and Mr. Burton talking about how other people are reacting to their interfaith work since the war began. So I wonder if either of you are facing kind of a pressure to say, yeah, interfaith is a nice idea, but now the rubber hit the road and enough is enough and you have to take sides.
Well, first of all, I want to be really clear that in my congregation, no, not at all. That in my congregation, that would not happen. And in many ways, people in the general, I would say, in many people in the greater Jewish community here in Ithaca would like to think that that's true of them as well. I can't speak for them, but that doesn't mean it's not hard. It doesn't mean there's not different. There's different challenges. I do think probably than usual.
That may be so. And just to affirm, Rabbi, what you were saying is that yesterday morning I attended an online event with over 20 people, many of them from your community, and there was. It was good to be in their company. Let me say it like that. And so I think that our communities here are able to understand that the relationships that we've developed over the course of time that we've been nurturing these things, are sustainable, and that we understand that the actions that we're seeing that are so disturbing that are happening, in Israel-Palestine, are not being carried out by our cousins, in faith here. And so, I would say that we have not felt in our community that I'm aware of a pushback against interfaith activity. I think people recognize, if anything, a higher importance of doing it. Some people who haven't been so vocally inquisitive about that have been speaking up and wondering, what are our Jewish neighbors thinking about this? They've been asking.
Yeah. I just want to acknowledge that we're talking about this a lot, about it as if it were a Jewish-Muslim thing, and I just want to really acknowledge not only that it's only a Jewish-Muslim thing, but that many, many Palestinians are also Christian.
That's right, sure.
And not only is that place, that little piece of land there, holy to all three faiths, but also there are, it's a place that's home to many Christian people, and many Christian people visit there, of course, too, and go on pilgrimage there, and it's a bit of an aside, but I just. I'm realizing that it's easy for me to forget, so I, right. You know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I want to say it so that we can all remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in a way that fits with my next question, which is, it's so simplistic, but I'm just going to put it this way: it's like, how do people start to become engaged in interfaith community if they're not part of a congregation already, or how can they show support or compassion?
That's a really good question. I think my first thought would be, you know, that bumper sticker, no justice, no peace, right? And we often, you know, you march in the streets and you're in a mixed crowd, lots of folks who are marching alongside you, maybe shouting this chant. But both of those words, justice and peace, have deep roots in our three religious traditions. They get sloganized by people in the streets or on a bumper sticker. But I think it's really important for your listeners to understand that some of the values that they hold dearest, just as human beings or as progressive people, let's say, are actually not things they have invented or have been invented in the last even 100 years or invented during the Civil Rights Movement. People in the Civil Rights Movement themselves were drawing on a deep tradition around these two words in particular, justice and peace, but also understandings of love and compassion. So one of the advantages of being part of a deep religious tradition that's centuries and centuries old is that, and I say this to my congregation, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Words are given to us through these generations in our sacred texts and how they've been interpreted that help to guide us and help to carve out a way forward when it's very difficult sometimes to know what the way forward is. Even though I walk through the veil of shadows, says Psalm 23, you are with me, right? So there is this sense that people have been wrestling with some of the most difficult issues that human beings can ever face for centuries, for thousands of years. And we are heirs to those traditions and carrying them on. And so what I have found is that the deeper you go into your tradition and the more you understand the traditions of your interfaith partners, the richer your experience is, but also the wiser you become about how to be in the world. So that's my pitch to those who might be on a more secular side, to at least respect the fact that, again, some of the things and values they hold dear are part of deep, deep traditions and have a really sense of richness about them.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, certainly we also have a tradition of reading psalms at times like this.
Mm-hmm,
sure. I call out from the narrow place and ask from where does my help come, and my help comes from the expanse. My help comes from God. My help comes when I listen, my help comes from somewhere. But it often takes a lot of translation for that to happen. And for people who are secular or, you know, aren't religiously oriented or don't believe in God or, you know, just aren't oriented that way. I guess which is an awful lot of the people in my life and where I grew up and in myself when I, you know, as the way that I grew up as well. There's any number of different ways that people might find their way, you know, people might find their way in a lot of different avenues, but, one thing is, in the gentlest ways you can let people know that you care about them. Another is, so that's one thing is, who do I know? Who can I say, hello, I'm thinking of you? Like, you don't have to tell me anything you don't want to tell me. Here I'm thinking of you, right? So that's one thing. Humanitarian aid is good in moments like this. So that's a good thing to do. Being gentle with yourself about not knowing what to do, I think, is also a good place to start, because we tend to think, oh my God, I'm so awful. I just don't know how to be a good, what, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how to be a good ally. I don't know how to be a good friend. I don't know what to do. I don't know any people, whatever it is, right? So that's one thing, is starting with compassion for ourselves is never a bad place to start. Partly, I think about just finding, like, where's my place in this right now? Like, I have something particular because of who I am and the skills I have or the relationships I have. Where is there a little opening that I can, that I can walk through? So those are some things I would say.
Can I add something real quick? We have this funny saying in our church, and we didn't invent it. I don't even know where we heard it, but we say church isn't perfect, it's practice. And so you're in a community, you're practicing being in community and all the complexity around that. So I think one of the advantages for the three of us and our communities as we increase our interactions and deepen our relationships is the practice of being in community. And I would say for someone who maybe isn't connected to a religious tradition, identify your community. Who is your community? And be your full self in your community, because interacting with other human beings, and again, all the challenges and complexities around that, helps to improve your life and the lives of, can help to improve your life and the lives of others.
So I'm going to go on a very practical bent.
Sure.
What I would say to everyone, not just people in my fellow, you know, in the Muslim community and in the other religious communities of Camarones County and the quote-unquote secular, you know, neighbors that we have and value so much, is educate yourselves. Mm. Everybody take the opportunity, read, find out what you can, whatever you can, about the historical context of Israel, Palestine, the Jewish people, you know, the Muslims, Islam, exactly. Inform yourselves and arm yourselves with knowledge. And it's really important in this time. One of the greatest things I could encourage people to do is to resist the reductivism that is happening right now in the way that we characterize things. We're so drawn, whatever perspective we come from, we're drawn to see things from this way. This is the correct way to see things. And I think it's really important for us to understand, you know, as much context as we can. It's very, very easy to look at the information that, you know, comes to us from this news source and from that news source, and to take these things and say these things are so completely contradictory, and say, well, the truth must simply somewhere be somewhere in between. And that's an easy thing to fall into and to become fatigued with trying to process information that has such disparity. The other thing that I would really encourage people to understand is that, as much as, you know, the context of us having this discussion here are three people representing different faiths that are living together in a community, the situation that has precipitated us being here is not a religious situation. And I think it's really important for people to understand that. It's very often characterized for us in our society that separates religion from state, that these people simply can't get along with each other because of their religious differences. And this is, nothing could be further from the truth. You know, we have evidence over centuries of Jewish and Muslim and Christian peoples coexisting in this tiny place where this conflict is coming. We have very, very good evidence of this historically. And so this is not a religious conflict. And I think that that's a really important thing for our secular neighbors to understand. So we can look a little deeper into the nature of what's going on, the dynamics of it, and try to see it as, you know, arm yourself with as much knowledge as you are able to take from the situation, look at it, evaluate what you're seeing, evaluate the information. And I think that that will inform the best way that you can be of support to your neighbors.
Thank you.
Keeping in mind that this can be edited, did I hear something about dinner?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that something? Yeah, absolutely. Totally, but is that something that you wanted to include?
We can. I mean, if it's going to
the comment,
if it's going
to go out
on Thursday, we can mention it because Thursday night is our next scheduled dinner.
Okay, it might be Thursday. It might be Monday. It's the last.
It's the last Thursday of every month.
Okay, why don't I have one of you just sort of? I don't want to put that out there if there are real safety concerns.
No, we have no safety concerns about that.
More dietary concerns.
That's right. That's right. And people just need to write on their little card. They need to write something that
and
says
it's vegetarian. It's, you know, all vegetarian.
So go ahead and just do the whole, like, sort of give a whole rundown, like an event announcement about what this dinner is and where it happens and whim and everything, in whoever wants.
So the interfaith dinners we've been carrying on for over 6 years now, and originally it was a co-partnership between Rabbi Shiva's community, the Tikkun V'Or, and our community, is Al-Huda Islamic Center, and the Lansing United Methodist Church. So the three of us were partnering. We cooked the idea, and we've been doing this monthly, last Thursday of the month, between 6 and 8 p.m. We timed it for the last Thursday because we're aware that, you know, some of the people in, again, local communities, you know, people don't have to be of a faith community to join us. We welcome everybody to come. But people who are getting down to that last time of, you know, the month when their food might be running out, you know, here's an opportunity to come and have dinner amongst friends. So, and now we have, you know, a tradition has developed where we invite other communities and congregations to host. This month, October, it's going to be hosted at the All Saints Parish in Lansing, nearby our center. And it was hosted last month by Reverend David's community, the First Congregational Church in Ithaca. So, you know, we rotate the hosting of that.
And so if someone wants to come, how do they find out where it's going to be, whichever month it is that they might be attending?
Oh, that's a good question. How do people find out?
I mean,
how do you find
Karen Wiener is the person that I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe can we send you something that you can then share on the...
Yeah, I also think that maybe we should start having, you know, one of the things Jim mentioned, PSAs. I wonder how you'd feel about having a monthly PSA that says this month the Interfaith Dinner is going to be whatever. And is it free or does it cost money?
Just bring
it's a potluck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's important to say.
Right. Yeah,
this is a potluck, a dish to pass meal. And we've asked people to bring a vegetarian dish so we avoid the potential dietary challenges that, you know, might be happening across traditions. And so people bring a simple vegetarian meal, label the ingredients so that people who have food allergies might, you know, be able to choose what, you know, they can safely eat. And it's simple as that. We have one rule of our getting together, which is, you know, if you get up to go for dessert or for a second portion, you go and sit with somebody else when you come back. So we really encourage the getting together.
When it comes to building interfaith community among you all, there comes a point, I think, when you have to decide, or something that tells you you can trust each other. So for each of you, I wonder if you can talk about how you got to that trust with each other.
I mean, I could throw something out. So we talked about the interfaith dinners, and they've been going on for years. And I think one of the advantages of interfaith dinners is you're bringing people together from different traditions, and we're doing something fundamental, right? We're eating together. And when you eat together, you talk, and you laugh, and you share stories, and you do get to know each other. But and there's a certain depth to those relationships that develop, no question. But I would say, at least speaking for myself, over the last couple of weeks, given what has just happened and is still happening, the emotional level has become deeper. In hearing from Rabbi Shifra and from Mahmoud, reflecting not only what they themselves as individuals have experienced, but also what members of their communities have experienced. And that, you don't necessarily get to that level of depth at an interfaith dinner or just in a casual interaction. You get there after something especially significant has happened, and you reach a deeper level of emotional connection through something like that.
That goes back to practice, right? That sort of goes back to that idea of practice.
Mm-hmm. Like practicing being in community, you mean?
Yeah. And also you were saying church is not performed, it's practice.
It's not perfect, it's practice. That's
perfect,
true.
It's practice. It's another form of that.
Yeah,
that it absolutely takes time. Someone can't just walk in and say, oh, I'm so concerned for
you.
I really care about Gaza.
So let me add a layer. I care about Palestine. So let me add a layer. But that level of emotional sharing would not have been possible had groundwork already been laid, right? So in a way, they kind of go hand in glove. Like interfaith dinners and other forms of interaction that we've had make it possible to be authentic with each other. But that's the groundwork that gets laid for when something really significant happens. You feel able to share in a way. I'm speaking now for you guys, in a way that you may not, that you wouldn't necessarily do at the first interfaith dinner where you're just meeting each other for the first time.
Yeah. I'm kind of the relative newcomer in town, so I feel like, you know, I feel like we're developing trust. You know, I mean, I'm grateful to feel comfortable enough with both Mahmoud and with David, you know, to be able to share what's true for me, and you know, and trust that we'll figure out our way beyond whatever is, you know, hard or challenging, or the places that are kind of, you know, kind of like creaky or hard or, you know, challenging. Like I'm just kind of grateful that that's it. Thank you.
And thank you. I think that I agree very much with David that, you know, the foundations that we build in coming together periodically or for different, you know, different events that, you know, we invite each other to, you know, this is, you know, a very important component of it. I think that, you know, in being people, you know, each of us that, you know, that deal in a capacity of caring for, you know, people in our communities also, you know, we'd understand how to read a person. You know, and like there's a certain level when somebody presents themselves, you know, we can tell how far, you know, we can extend ourselves. You know, there's a certain, you know, part that's just human to human that, you know, we understand these things. And, you know, somebody, you know, whoever it might be that is in a place of challenge, you know, we each will gauge, you know, what, you know, how to respond to that in a way that, you know, may bring the most benefit. I think that, you know, when events happen, and I know that, you know, for instance, when the attack on the synagogue happened a few years ago, you know, a number of members from, you know, our community went, Rabbi, to your community. This was before you were here. And, you know, we stood at your, you know, your Shabbat service. We stood, you know, behind you. And, you know, we were cradling your community. And then when the attacks happened on the mosques in New Zealand and our neighbors at this point, we didn't have a place to have an event. Our neighbors at Lansing United Methodist opened their church to us. And there were about 200 people that, you know, were there, you know, again, embracing our community and just helping us hold, you know, the shock and the grief of that event. And so, you know, I think that, you know, those relationships that we build have such importance. And, you know, it's the immediate, it's the longitudinal, you know, so however we navigate, you know, this particular situation, and, you know, there are going to be unique challenges to this that, you know, we haven't, you know, encompassed before, that I trust we will be able to. And, you know, it's really the good work that everybody has done, you know, in all of our communities, you know, to help support this.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do appreciate that optimism. Thank you for that. I think I needed that. I feel like interfaith work is inherently optimistic.
Hopeful, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Hopeful?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like hopeful more than I like optimistic. You know, I don't know. It's just a preference I have, because I feel like optimism is easily the word optimism is easily misunderstood. Again, as kind of Pollyanna.
Oh yeah,
or something,
I was going to,
you know,
say,
I mean?
It's a bit perky.
Yeah, but hope. I think we always have to have room for hope. even when we can't quite find it, we have to have kind of make space for it. That's what I think. That's what I believe. Okay. The only other thing that I would want to add is that we're talking here as people from what we refer to as the three Abrahamic traditions. Our community is much more diverse than that. Our greater community is much more diverse than that, and we have Hindus and Buddhists, and we all participated in a pretty wonderful series of events up at the Namgyel Tibetan Monastery a little while ago. And for example, I mean, it's just an example of all the places that there are opportunities that we haven't. I don't know. I know I look forward to more and more opportunities to explore. The more different perspectives I can hear from and learn from and experiences I can learn about, you know, the better. The more human I get to be.
Thank you all so much. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
I appreciate your being so open. This has been part two of our conversation about local interfaith work with Rabbi Shifra Tobachman, Mahmoud Burton, and Reverend Dr. David Caden. Their recommendations of readings, humanitarian organizations they respect, as well as links to both parts of this interview, are on our website, wrfi.org. I'm Celia Clark. This has been a WRFI News feature.